Blog Talk Radio.
I can't help but when I look at you, nothing but American dream. Oh, 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 oh. It's my dream.
And welcome back to CEO in 10. I'm Rick Tocchini. Our very special guest today is Alexander Lowry, who is Professor of Finance, Director of Master of Science in Financial Analysis Program at Gordon College. And as he says in LinkedIn, he brings an unusual bilingual perspective to the academic world, having spent 15 years in senior executive positions in international business and finance. He is a frequent speaker at gatherings of business leaders, corporate events, and his views have often been cited in the media, including the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Economist, Forbes, to name a few. And we were talking in the pre-show about the podcast that they're about to launch. Alexander, welcome to CEO in 10.
Rick, it's a pleasure to be with you today.
Nice to have you on, sir. And fill in the gaps for our listening audience about your own career journey that led to you taking on this position as professor of finance.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to say that it was mapped out from the beginning. And I think when you look backwards, like I'll do now, you can tell a story and you can see how the pieces fit together. But it definitely was not how I had projected it would go. So I assumed when I left college, I went to one of those great liberal arts undergrad schools, that I would be working on Wall Street. And what I was a bit naive at the time, and I assumed I was pretty smart, people would see that. And I'll never forget the Goldman Sachs partner telling me, you know, you're really smart, but you didn't major in the fields that I expected. I was a history major. So I'm going to hire the Wharton undergrad kids because they're safe with picks. So didn't start in Wall Street, ended up in management consulting. And I did that for a dozen years and absolutely loved it, working with, you know, Fortune 500 CEOs, helping them build their business. That was thrilling for me. But I still had that Wall Street itch that I wanted to scratch. So I went to Wharton and got my MBA, and now I have that stamp, right? I got that check mark that says, hey, you're a finance guy, you're Wharton MBA. And that allowed me to switch over to Wall Street, and I joined JP Morgan, where I worked in a COO capacity for 4.5 years before we decided to make a quality of life change, start a family, and we became a professor up here at Gordon College, and happy to share more of any of those details.
Well, that is a very interesting journey, and I know that a lot of our listeners struggle with making decisions that are about family first and not about their professional future. Give some advice to those CEOs that are out there today listening that are considering moving to academia because it's time to give their family more focus.
So I'll start out with a brief story to just put some context around that. I was in the New York Times this summer where they were talking about people doing a sort of a weird hiatus during their off time. And so during the summer, I was sharing the story about how we bought a house and we're renovating it. And the reporter and I were having a good conversation, said, how did you get into this? How did you move from Wall Street to do this? And I give all the credit to my wife, the lovely and talented Rebecca, when we were engaged, said, I don't think you can, you working 100 hours a week at a bank is going to do a lot for us. And I don't think that's too dissimilar from a lot of the executives I learned from my father. You focus on your job, you knock it out of the park, you do great things there, that's how you provide for your family. But as I started to step back, I realized at the end of the day, what was my priority? And that was my wife and my now daughter, and they were above my job. There'll be times when that flexes a bit, right? Work-life balance, and you have to respect that. But in general, we wanted a lifestyle that still allowed me to have fulfilling work, to do great work, to give back. And so I moved over to academia. After that New York Times article came out, I had multiple executives from Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, other places who had also left those high-powered jobs, had moved into academia. One is at FuQuest Business School and some other schools. And they said, you wouldn't believe how many people like us have gone this route. It's an easy change afterwards.
Mm-hmm. You know, and having been in Procter and PepsiCo, and of course this was a few years ago, I still look back and wonder if I had introduced this notion of wanting to go into broadcasting and professional mentoring, if they would have said that's a sign of weakness or a lack of commitment. What would you say to those people out there that struggle with being transparent to their employers today about what they truly want to pursue in life?
So I'll answer that by saying I did a project in my consulting days where I was working for Unilever. So we were working with one of the deputies to the CEO running a massive project, and he was incredibly smart. He was incredibly driven, and it was no holds barred. And in many ways, those are often the people up in the corner suites. My perspective is I need to find someone that I can align with. I have learned that if I have a great boss who I respect, who I care about, who respects me as a person, not only do I succeed in that job, but everything in my life works better. And so it doesn't matter how hard the job is, it can work really well. So I think if you're in a place where you don't feel respected and you can't be authentic and you can't be genuine, I've learned this for myself, that's not a good place to be. There were times early in my career I had what I call a mask on. I was presenting the person that I thought they needed me to be, and I realized I will never be successful because that's not really myself. So I've learned that I need to find roles where I want to be who I am, and that is a great sign. So I think for a lot of people, you can work really hard, you can do really well. I don't think that will feed you in the long run.
Yeah, wow. That is, those are great words of advice. You know, you are now today a CEO advisor and a mentor, and you're on board of directors. Somewhere along your path, you must have had some great mentors in your own life. Share a few stories of your favorite mentors and how they positively influenced your life now as even a dad, a husband, and a successful professor at Gordon College.
Oh, without a doubt. I don't think any of us, well, some people might get it lucky, but in general, most of us have learned from smarter other people. And I am blessed that I had a, what I call my personal board of advisors. And these were, and I think everyone should have this, right? So you've got, and over the course of your life in different seasons, the people on your board will change. So people that have been there and they have done that, maybe it's be from fatherhood because it's brand new to me, or it's I moved into academia. One of the gentlemen who I'll stand out to me is Tom Cole, and he's the head, the co-head of Leverage Finance at Citigroup. So he's very senior, and he taught me not only how to be successful at my work, but also at home, and how to balance between those. His career is crazy intense, and yet he is down to earth. He is a family man. He is always available, and he has found ways to be authentic in all of those lifestyles. And just to be able to almost sit at his knee and learn from him has been a blessing. So I remember the day before we were going out for Thanksgiving, we were going to road trip out there. My family's from Ohio, so Procter & Gamble, Cincinnati. My family's out from Cincinnati. We would drive out from New Jersey. We're going to do the red eye out on Wednesday night, just have some quality time in the car. And my fiance and my mom were going to be in the car. And I thought this was great quality time together that we don't normally get. And the night before, Tom said, I'm not sure this is the trip you think it's going to be. Let's rethink how this is going to go. Just because I hadn't been there before. I had no idea.
You know, that's why I love mentors, because they can speak the truth into people's lives. That's a great story. Share another mentor tale with us.
Someone who I really respect is Bob Dahl. So he is at Nuveen Asset Management, Chief Equity Officer, Strategist, just also incredibly successful in his field, and yet humble as the day is long, has learned where his values are. So, for example, before Bob became huge in the finance world, he and his wife, Leslie, realized they were already well enough, right? They were doing well, and they decided, we don't want to get into this game of keeping up with the Joneses. And they set aside, well, this is what we live on, and the rest we will give away. And as they have been blessed with more in their life, they have been blessed to give more away to others. And that was at a time when I was sort of wrestling with working on Wall Street, good money is coming in, what do you do with all this, how do you process it? And to see someone like that who was just sharing, because he would get excited, he's like every day, I'm like, here's another great group I can support, this is wonderful. And his philosophy was, I do really well earning money, which is what I'm good at. And there are other people that are really good needing money, whether they're running nonprofits or they're saving the world. They need people like me to be able to fund them. And realizing everyone has unique time and talents, we should not be embarrassed about using those wherever they are, but then how do you bless others with that? For me, that was great perspective.
I mean, that is great. It's almost as if those individuals are fantastic at recognizing baseline truths and strengths in their own talents and what they do and how others contribute. And so everything is seemingly crystal clear. And to that end, Alexander, when you were advising CEOs today, tell our listeners why it's important that CEOs today need to have outside voices and advisors to help them recognize their blind spots?
I think we've all been there and done that. We've seen the hard-charging people that are very successful, and they've made it work sort of my way or the highway. And I remember being in a boardroom, and this was a new board that I was on, and I probably hadn't fully realized the concept that it was an entire yes board, and I didn't realize I was being hired as a yes board. And the CEO was presenting what he was going to do, and it was going around the room, and everybody was saying, yes, this is great, we'll go do it. And I'm thinking, there's a lot of risks here that no one is raising. I was literally the last person on the table. When I got around to the last side of the table, and it was my turn to talk, I said, I think that's a really brave decision. And I went silent. So did the rest of the room. And the CEO looked at me and he said, what do you mean? Which was now my opportunity to explain why I thought there were risks and that we should consider them. And I was trying to figure out, you know, sort of an EQ way, right? What, how does my emotional intelligence tell me to connect with the person? I couldn't challenge him. I gave him a way to be thoughtful about it. All of us have really great ideas, but my philosophy is if I'm the smartest person in the room, we've got a real problem. I would love to surround myself with smarter people, with challenging people. You can do it in a constructive way, but I know that I can't consider every possibility. I know that I don't have every skill set under the sun. I want to surround myself with people who do have those that complement me, and I think Richard Branson is a great example of this. He starts companies all the time. He knows what his skill set is. He's brilliant at marketing. He's very good at strategy. He's terrible at finance, and he hates it. He will hire a smart young CFO who wants to work hard and cut his teeth and learn under him, and they will work really well together. I think you have to understand where your blind spots are to be successful.
Yeah, I do too. I love that. And I, you know, kind of segueing into promoting your new podcast, there is a need for more instructive and I might even add constitutional building for board of directors, because I don't think that there's a guidebook that's out there on it, and maybe there shouldn't be, but your new podcast is going to address effective board of directors. Tell us a little bit more about it, and when are you guys launching?
We are launching on February 6th. It's going to be called Boardroom Bound, and the philosophy is new and aspiring directors. So if someone is looking for their first board role or perhaps in their first 10 years of board life, because there's a learning curve like everything else, we just feel like, just like we talked about now, mentorship, we have some people on the show who've done this a million times before, and there are so many nuggets and lessons learned. It's sort of that philosophy of, oh, should I have checked with everybody before the board to see if they're all yes people? You know, different things you never would have thought of before. We can learn along the way, but also some of the training and the knowledge that we just want to share with people. We have seen some devastating situations recently about board failure. So CBS, an example that just breaks your heart to see that many of the board members seemingly knew what that CEO was doing. Uber, some of the failings there. There's no shortage of these lessons, right? We don't have to go far back. We would love to short-circuit that process. We need more good ethical leadership in the boardroom, and we want to prepare people to do that.
Yeah, and I think it even begins with a proper selection criteria for picking the right people. And, you know, if you look at all the CPGs that are out there today, these individuals that want to come in and kind of storm into the board and because they own a lot of shares and then they want to have their voice heard as if P&G is just the exception now. You know, those kinds of individuals could have been chosen proactively for a board, right?
Mm. It's interesting when you think about how do you make up a board. There's every board, well, I'm not talking to say every, but most boards have a competency matrix, and there's 10 or 12 competencies on there, and you're figuring out, okay, where do we need more strengths? Are we missing anything? Maybe we need a cyber expert and send somebody that has some awareness of that and can ask some of the right questions, whatever it might be. And I would assume most board members are going to tick 6 or 8 of those boxes, but you're doing that assessment. You know, we're no longer where we were 20 years ago where the CEO goes out to lunch with his buddy. He's like, you know, I need another board member. Why don't you just come sit on there? There's a fiduciary legal responsibility on board members now. You're not, in the old days, you would have people sitting up there reading a newspaper, not paying attention because it didn't matter. That is a very different place from where we are today, which is a good thing. And we need to be very thoughtful about it. And people talk about diversity on the boards. And we don't just mean gender or nationality. There's all sorts of different skill sets and thought processes that we want to be involved. Boards are becoming more complex and sophisticated. That's a good thing. We need to make sure that the members are prepared for that as well.
That's exactly right. Well, Alexander, it has been an honor to have you on our CEO and 10 show today. Where can our listeners go to find out more information about what you guys are doing with this upcoming podcast?
The easiest way to find it is on our website at Gordon, where it's hosted. So gordon.edu is the website, and the word podcast is in front of that. So podcast.gordon.edu.
Fantastic. We want to have you back on again to keep us updated on all your progress. But thank you so much. You took our show to a different dimension in talking about balance of professional and personal life, and also advisement to CEOs. I really do appreciate it, and we would love to have you back on again in the future.
Well, Rick, it was a pleasure, and I'll be delighted to join you again.
Thanks again. We appreciate it. And that was Alexander Lowry, and a finance professor at Gordon College, and he's behind this new podcast that's going to be all about board of directors. And boy, we need that today. Hey, thanks for joining us on our show. As we always say here, keep talking and listen more intently. And we want to thank our ongoing sponsor of this network, Gracefully Yours Greeting Cards and Travel Journals. You can go to gracefully-yours.com to find out any information about their fantastic encouragement cards. And they are the only company that actually publishes mentoring cards as well. Talk to you again, and thanks for joining us on this CEO in 10.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.